It's good to see everyone here. It looked like it was going to be a little less crowded today. It seemed like a lot of people were out, but the seats are filled up afterwards. So welcome also to everyone listening online, too. Well, the title of this message today is Father and Son. And since I am single, never had children, never raised children, I thought it would be rather appropriate for me to give a message on child rearing. Or maybe not, but this message could be considered a lesson about child rearing. Fortunately, we have the Bible to give examples that I can draw upon. The only thing I've got going for me is that I was a child once, and really that doesn't count for anything. This is not a success story that I'm going to talk about today. It's the message about the relationship between David and Absalom. Now, one of the most memorable laments in the Bible is 2 Samuel 19:4. And if you want to turn to that section, we'll be spending most of the time in that area. 2 Samuel 19:4. See, I didn't cheat and mark my Bible this time, so it... Okay, there we go. But it says there, "But the king covered his face, and the king cried out with a loud voice, 'Oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son, my son.'" And there's no way I can do justice to the way that he would have said that. He would have cried it out because he was truly mourning his son Absalom. Well, what happened? What happened to bring things to that point? Absalom surely was loved by David. The Bible makes it clear. But I would like to review the life of Absalom and David today and look at some of the decisions that were made along the way, either by David or by Absalom or by others that affected them, and to see how the consequences played out from that. Let's start with the birth of Absalom. If you turn to 2 Samuel 3, it talks about the birth. It says, "Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. But David grew stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul grew weaker and weaker." Now this is when David and Saul were at odds with each other, and David's life was threatened by Saul many times. It says in verse 2, "Sons were born to David in Hebron. His firstborn was Amnon by Ahinab the Jezreelitess. His second, Chileab by Abigail, the widow of Nabal the Carmelite. The third, Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. The fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith. The fifth, Shephatiah, the son of Abital. And the sixth, Ithream, by David's wife Eglah. These were born to David in Hebron." Now, generally, when we read this, we focus on the names of these sons. There were six of them that were born there. Absalom was the third. Amnon was the firstborn. But I'd like you to note one other thing. There are not only six sons mentioned, there are six different mothers mentioned. So this was a bad way to start off. And that wasn't the end of it either. It says that he had more children in Jerusalem in 2 Samuel 5. A couple of chapters later, in verse 13, it says, "And David took more concubines and wives from Jerusalem after he had come from Hebron. Also more sons and daughters were born to David." Now these are the names of those who were born to him in Jerusalem, and it lists them off: Shamua, Shonab, Lathan, Solomon, and so on. It lists 11 more that were born there. And it's clarified a little bit further in 1 Chronicles chapter 3. You don't need to turn there, where it's the parallel account that lists his children born in Hebron and then those born in Jerusalem. And they list 13 more that were born in Jerusalem. So evidently a couple of them must have died. It says they were all These were all the sons of David, besides the sons of the concubines and Tamar, their sister. Now let's look back. David was allied with the Philistines back in 1 Samuel 27. Just to fill in a little bit of background here, this is 1 Samuel 27 and verse 1. David and Saul, remember, were at odds with each other. And David said in his heart, "Now I shall perish someday by the hand of Saul. There's nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape to the land of the Philistines, and Saul will despair of me to seek me any more in any part of Israel. So I shall escape out of his hand." So David thought that if he stayed where he was, Saul was eventually going to kill him. Saul was certainly trying to do that. And to get away from him, he was just going to leave. He was going to join with the Philistines just to get out of the way of Saul. Now it talks about some of the raids that he participated in with the Philistines. And if you look at verse 8 in particular, it said, "And David and his men went up and raided the Geshurites, the Girzites, and the Amalekites. For those nations were the inhabitants of the land of from of old, as you go to Shur, even as far as the land of Egypt. And whenever David attacked the land, he left neither man nor woman alive, but took away the sheep, the oxen, the donkeys, the camels, the apparel, and returned and came to Achish." Now I know I had not picked up on this before I looked into it in a little more detail. It says that while he was with the Philistines, they went up and raided the Geshurites. And if you refer back to the list of his children, it says the third, Absalom the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, the king of Geshur. Now this may have been during the raid that he met this wife and took her. He may have taken her captive, I don't know. But it was a bad way to start a marriage. And certainly among the Geshurites, there would be ill feelings toward David and toward the rest of Israel as well. So I'm going to call these decision points, these decisions that were made that affected the lives of David and Absalom. And the first decision point was that he took many wives and he had many children from different mothers. And as I mentioned, there may have been some latent hostility between Geshur and between David and his son Absalom. Now we hear a little bit about Absalom in 2 Samuel 14. We find that he was very good looking. 2 Samuel 14, verse 25. "Now in all Israel there was no one who was praised as much as Absalom for his good looks. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. And when he cut the hair of his head at the end of every year, he cut it because it was heavy on him. When he cut it, he weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels, according to the king's standard." A couple of things to pick up on here. He was extremely good looking, apparently. He stood out from all the others in the good looks. Now, when I was looking at myself in the mirror this morning, I had thoughts, but it certainly wasn't, "Boy, I'm the best looking one in the area." I feel more like, I guess, the son of the invisible man. He was nothing to look at. All right, a groan, that's appropriate. The other thing, his hair. He cut it not because it was too long necessarily or got in his eyes or in his way, but because it weighed so much. It said it weighed 200 shekels. And in a commentary by R.D. Bergen, the New American Commentary, now he calculates the weight of a shekel to be 11.5 grams. And he says this means that his hair weighed about 5 pounds, a little more than 5 pounds. And if you think about putting a 5-pound sack of sugar or flour or something on your head, that's a lot of weight to carry around. And we can see where it would be a problem. He also mentions that the hair, just the fact that it's mentioned, is probably not a good thing. And he cites Esau, for example, who was described as the hairy one, and he's the one who gave up his birthright, or Samson and the problems that he had because of his hair. And he mentions that there are two primary reasons mentioned in the Torah for a man to cut his hair. One is to give the hair to God following the successful completion of a Nazirite vow, and the other was to enter into a state of ceremonial cleanness before the Lord. But neither of these applied to Absalom. With him, it was just an inconvenience. It's too heavy. We'll find out later that it played a role in the end of his life as well. I also looked on Google to see if I could find out, well, how much does a head of hair weigh? And I got almost any answer you can look for, anywhere from 1/4 pound to 2.5 pounds, depending on the length and I suppose the thickness or fineness of the hair. So 5 pounds is a lot of hair. Well, the second decision point is that Amnon seeks and takes some bad advice from Jonadab. In 2 Samuel 13, verse 1, it says, "After this, Absalom, the son of David, had a lovely sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her." Now remember, Amnon was the eldest, Absalom was the third, Tamar was the sister of Absalom. So Tamar and Amnon were half-brother and half-sister. It says that Amnon was so distressed over his sister Tamar that he became sick. You've heard about being lovesick. Well, this was literal. He was so in love that he was just sick about it. And it says, "For she was a virgin, and it was improper for Amnon to do anything to her. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. Now Jonadab was a very crafty man. And he said to him, 'Why are you, the king's son, becoming thinner day after day? Will you not tell me?' Amnon said to him, 'I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister.'" So it turns out that he, first of all, went to the wrong person for advice. It says that this is a very crafty man, and maybe deep down that's why he went to him, because he thought, well, if anyone could find me a way to be alone with Tamar, Jonadab can. And certainly, Jonadab then advised a ruse for Amnon to be alone with Tamar. And continuing on, 2 Samuel 13 and verse 11, it says, "Now when she had brought them to him to eat, he took hold of her and said to her, 'Come lie with me, my sister.' And she argues with him, 'Do not force me, do not do this disgraceful thing.'" And she goes on to say at the end of verse 13, something kind of interesting, "Now therefore, please speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you." However, he would not heed her voice, and being stronger than she, he forced her and lay with her. So he sought this bad advice, he followed it, got alone with Tamar, and decision point 3 was this episode between the two of them. I thought it was interesting where she said, "Now therefore speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you." So evidently, even though they were half-brother and half-sister, if Amnon had truly been in love with her and wanted to marry her, he could have gone to King David, and David would be within his rights to say that, "Okay, you two can marry then." But that really isn't what he wanted. And then it says in verse 15 of 2 Samuel that Amnon hated her exceedingly after this, so that the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he had loved her. And Amnon said to her, "Arise, be gone." The next decision point, number 4, Tamar tells her brother Absalom what happened. And in verse 20, Absalom, her brother, said to her, "Has Amnon, your brother, been with you?" Now, why would he suspect this unless Amnon's lust for her had been that noticeable that he picked up on it? But he says, but now hold your peace, my sister. He is your brother. Do not take this thing to heart. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. So Absalom gave her the right advice. He told her, just don't do anything. We'll go through David and see what he has to say about it. This decision point, when King David heard of all these things, he was very angry. And that's where it ends. He didn't do anything about it. He was mad about it, but it doesn't say anything at all that he did anything to correct Amnon for what he had done. And it says, and Absalom spoke to his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. So there was a hatred between these two brothers now. Now, there might have been a rivalry initially, Absalom being the third born and Amnon being the firstborn. Amnon would have been next in line for the throne. Absalom seems to have been more qualified for it. And we don't know about the second son. He's not mentioned again, so evidently he was not in the picture anymore. So David did nothing about it. The next decision point, number five, and if you're wondering how many points am I going to have, and you're looking at your watch and pacing things, there are 18 points, but they go a little quicker at the end. Number five, in 2 Samuel 13, verse 23, it came to pass after two full years of this hatred that was building between Absalom and Amnon, that Absalom had sheep shearers in Baal Hazor, which is near Ephraim. So Absalom invited all the king's sons. Then Absalom came to the king and said, kindly note your servant has sheep shearers. Please let the king and his servants go with your servant. But the king said to Absalom, no, my son, let us not all go now, lest we be a burden to you. Then he urged him, but he would not go, and he blessed him. Then Absalom said, well, if you won't let them all come, if not, please let my brother Amnon go with us. Wouldn't that set off some kind of flag, a red flashing light, a signal? If he asked specifically for his brother Amnon to come, these two hated each other. Didn't David remember what had gone on, and didn't he recognize that there was this animosity between them? Apparently not. It doesn't indicate that here. And the king said to him, why should he go with you? But Absalom urged him. So he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. So this decision point is David allowing Amnon to go with Absalom. And we find out what happened next. Decision point six, in verse 28 of chapter 13. Now Absalom had commanded his servant, saying, watch now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say to you, strike Amnon, then kill him. So we see what's behind all this. It's apparent anyway that he wants Amnon there so he can kill him, so he can resolve this feud between the two of them. He says, do not be afraid. Have I not commanded you? Be courageous and valiant. So the servants of Absalom did to Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and each one got on his mule and fled. So Absalom had his brother Amnon killed. Now David hears about this. First, the news comes to him that Absalom had killed all of his sons. And then it says the king arose and tore his garments and lay on the ground, and all his servants stood by with their clothes torn. Then Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, answered and said, let not my lord suppose that they have killed all the young men, the king's sons, for only Amnon is dead. So it's not quite as bad, but still to lose any of your sons is tragic. For by the command of Absalom, this has been determined from the day that he forced his sister Tamar. Now this Jonadab is kind of pointing his finger and saying, Well, none of this would have happened if Absalom had not forced his sister Tamar. And Jonadab, remember the crafty one, he's the one who told Amnon how to be alone with her. So he was more or less behind it, but now he's stepping away from that and pointing his finger at it. Now therefore let not my lord the king take the thing to his heart to think that all the king's sons are dead, for only Amnon is dead. In verse 34, still in 2 Samuel 13, then Absalom fled. Well, he was in danger of his life now, or his life was in danger. All the other king's sons would have been after him. And the young man who was keeping watch lifted his eyes and looked, and there many people were coming from the road on the hillside beside him. And this is the king's sons coming back. And the king's sons indeed came, and they lifted up their voice and wept. The king and all his servants wept bitterly. But Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Ahimehud, king of Geshur. So Absalom fled, and he spent 3 years in Geshur. It's where his mother was from. That's one of the cities that David had invaded. So you can imagine the propaganda that would have been fed into his head when he was up there. Decision point 8, it says, and David mourned for his son every day. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there 3 years. Now David was mourning for his son Amnon, the one who had been killed. But he was also missing Absalom as well. After 3 years, he was in Geshur. It says, and King David longed to go to Absalom, for he had been comforted concerning Amnon because he was dead. So he had gotten over that part. So decision point 8 is now that Absalom is gone, David longs to see him, but he doesn't do anything about it. He's gone for 3 years. Decision point 9, Joab sees that David misses Absalom, and he arranges for a way to bring him back. And in verse 21, the king said to Joab, all right, I've granted this thing. Go therefore and bring back the young man Absalom. So David finally says, okay, Absalom, come back here. And in verse 24, and the king said, let him return to his own house, but do not let him see my face. So Absalom returned to his own house, but he did not see the king's face. So this is kind of a mixed blessing. Absalom had been gone for 3 years. Finally, David says, okay, he can come back to Jerusalem, but I'm not going to see him. Even though he longed to see him, I have a lot of questions for David and about David in some of these decisions. And why? What else was going on? There must have been other things going on in the background that we don't know about, because some of these seem like obvious mistakes. Decision point 10, and Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem, but did not see the king's face. This went on for 2 years that David did not talk to Absalom, even though he was there in Jerusalem. Decision point 11, one of the few good decisions made, David finally allows Absalom to come to him. In 2 Samuel 14, starting in verse 29, Absalom had been trying to get to see David, and he had been trying to go through Joab to make arrangements, but Joab wouldn't talk to him either. So finally, he had his servants set his field on fire just to get his attention. And that worked. At least Joab came to Absalom's house and said, why have your servants set my field on fire? And Absalom said, I sent to you saying, come here so I may send you to the king to say, why have I come from Geshur? Be better for me to be there still. Now therefore, let me see the king's face. But if there is iniquity in me, let him execute me. So he wants the decision made. He wants to talk to David. And if David doesn't see him, doesn't want anything to do with him, then it's better to just end his life and be done with things. So Joab went to the king and told him, and when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and then the king kissed Absalom. So it looks like they had a friendly meeting. We don't really know any more about it, what went on there, but David did finally allow Absalom to come to him. That was decision point 11. Now, number 12, we see that things were not resolved between Absalom and David because Absalom started seeking the favor of the public. He started building a following for himself. And this is in 2 Samuel 15. It says that Absalom provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. And he'd rise early and stand beside the way to the gate. This is in Jerusalem. So it was whenever anyone who had a lawsuit came to the king for a decision, that Absalom would call to him and say, "What city are you from?" And he would say, "Your servant is from such and such a tribe of Israel." And then Absalom would say to him, "Look, your case is good and right, but there's no deputy of the king to hear you." Moreover, Absalom would say, "Oh, that I were made judge in the land, and everyone who has any suit or cause would come to me, then I would give him justice." Now, he not only has the good looks going for him, he's got the personality, he's got the political skills to gain a following and to win over the people. And he's saying, "Look, I understand your problem, and I would love to help you, and if I were in a position to do so, I certainly would. David doesn't have people to handle your case because you're not from the right area, but if I were there, you certainly would get justice." And so it was whenever anyone came near to bow down to him that he would put out his hand and take him and kiss him. In this manner, Absalom acted toward all Israel who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. People were just turning away from David toward Absalom. So that was decision point 12. He seeks the favor of the public. Number 13, he goes to Hebron. In 2 Samuel 15, 7, now it came to pass after, your Bible may say 40 years, the newer translations say 4, and 4 seems to be more logical here. Came to pass after 4 years that Absalom said to the king, "Please let me go to Hebron and pay the vow which I made to your Lord, to the Lord." And it says, he took a vow while I dwelt in Geshur, saying, "If the Lord indeed brings me back to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord." And the king said, "Go to peace." And so he went to Hebron, and he did indeed pay his vow there, but that wasn't the full reason he was going there. It says Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, "As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, 'Absalom reigns in Hebron.'" That's why he's going there. He's going to establish his reign. And with Absalom went 200 men invited from Jerusalem, and they went along innocently and did not know anything. Then Absalom sent for Ahithophel the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, from Gilo, while he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy grew strong, for the people of Absalom continually increased in number. So after 4 years of winning over the hearts of the people of Israel, he had his following. He went to Hebron, and he started establishing himself. Decision point 14. David flees. He has to flee. He sees what's going on. He sees the people turning to Absalom. And it says, he went up by the ascent of the Mount of Olives. This is 2 Samuel 15:30. And he had his head covered and went barefoot. All the people who were with him covered their heads and went up, weeping as they went up. And someone told David, saying, "Ahithophel is among the conspirators." And David said, "O Lord, I pray, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Ahithophel is a very wise counselor. He's an obedient one. He gives not what the people want to hear, but what the Lord wants them to hear. And he gives good advice, and David knew that. So Absalom asks Ahithophel for advice, and Ahithophel said to Absalom, go into your father's concubines, whom he has left to keep the house, and all Israel will hear that you are abhorred by your father, and the hands of all who are with you will be strong. So they pitched a tent for Absalom on top of the house, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. And this too will come up later. Now the advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was as if one had inquired at the oracle of God. So was all the advice of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom. So Ahithophel is saying to go attack now. But decision point 15, David seeks a second opinion. He goes to Hushai. Hushai the Archite, who's another advisor. So Hushai said to Absalom, the advice that Ahithophel has given is not good at this time. He says that David and his men, they're mighty men, and they're enraged now like a bear robbed of their cubs. Your father's a man of war. And by now he's hidden in some pit or some other place, and that if you attack now, there will just be a slaughter because he's ready for you to come. Therefore, I advise that all Israel be fully gathered to you from Dan to Beersheba, like the sand that is by the sea for the multitude, and that you go to battle in person. So he gives a little bit contradictory advice. He said the advice that Ahithophel gave is good, and it probably would have been the best thing, but he said to wait. And so decision point 15 is that Absalom follows the advice of David's friend Hushai rather than the advice of Ahithophel. Now word gets to David, and it says, so Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the advice of Hushai the Archite is better than the advice of Ahithophel, for the Lord had purposed to defeat the good advice of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring disaster on Absalom. So decision point 16, Absalom attacks, and this is after a little bit, 2 Samuel 18:6. So the people went out into the field of battle against Israel, and the battle was in the woods of Ephraim. The people of Israel were overthrown there before the servants of David, and a great slaughter of 20,000 took place there that day. For the battle there was scattered over the face of the whole countryside, and the woods devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. Then Absalom met the servants of David. Absalom rode on a mule. The mule went under the thick boughs of a great terebinth tree, and his head caught in the terebinth, so he was left hanging between heaven and earth. And the mule, which was under him, went on. Now a certain man saw it. Now this is something that you see in cartoons, when a man is riding on a horse or a donkey or whatever animal it might be, and he goes under a low tree, and his head sticks in the fork, or gets caught in the branches, and the horse keeps on going. The man is left hanging there. But this happened in real life. And you can imagine the amazement of this man that saw it. Now, that would have been like us finding Osama bin Laden just hanging in a tree somewhere out in plain sight or something like that. Joab was still alive. But this certain man saw it, and Absalom was still alive. Certain man saw it and told Joab and said, I just saw Absalom hanging in a terebinth tree. And you can imagine the way he said it. It's a bit of disbelief and amazement and surprise. And certainly good news for them. Decision point 17. And Joab said, I cannot linger with you. And he took three spears in his hand and thrust them through Absalom's heart while he was still alive in the midst of the terebinth tree. And 10 young men who bore Joab's armor surrounded Absalom and struck and killed him. It says, and they took Absalom and cast him into a large pit in the woods and laid a very large heap of stones over him. And all Israel fled, everyone to his tent. Now they're thinking that this is a great deal and something to rejoice over. They are very happy. They have killed the leader of the enemy. Decision point 17, Joab and his men killed Absalom. Then at verse 18, it says, now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and set up a pillar for himself, which is in the king's valley, where he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar after his own name. And to this day, it's called Absalom's Monument. Actually, he had had sons. He had three sons, but evidently all of them had been killed somewhere along the way or died from other causes. So he had no one to leave behind him. And decision point 18, Absalom is dead now, and despite everything that's gone on, David mourns Absalom's death. In 2 Samuel 18:33, then the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said thus, O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place, O Absalom, my son, my son. And Joab was told, behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. So the victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people. For the people heard it said that day, the king is grieved for his son. And the people stole back into the city that day as people who are ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. But the king covered his face, and the king cried out with a loud voice, O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son, my son. And that's where we started. You see everything that happened in between. Now, I counted 18 decision points. If you read through this, you can break it out differently. The number of points or what they are doesn't matter. The point is that there were a number of spots along the way that things could have been done differently. And there's no way to know what the outcome would have been if they had been done differently. Absalom definitely had what it took to be a leader, and he had the favor of the people. He possibly would have been the next king if he and David had worked together, and the nation under the two of them would have been stronger and united. But that's all speculation. Besides these 18 points, though, there's an earlier decision point, probably the biggest one of all, and that's back in 2 Samuel 12:7. David was cursed because of his affair with Bathsheba. It had to happen this way because God told him it would. And if you look back in 2 Samuel 12, Nathan has given David this allegory, and he says to David, you are the man, thus says the Lord God of Israel. I anointed you king over Israel, and I delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave you your master's house and your master's wives into your keeping, and gave you the house of Israel and Judah. And if that had been too little, I would have also have given you much more. Why have you despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? You have killed Uriah the Hittite with a sword. You have taken his wife to be your wife and have killed him with the sword of the people of Amnon. And because David did this, because he had this affair, he goes on to say, now therefore the sword shall never depart from your house because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. And certainly the sword was still present in his house. Thus says the Lord, behold, I will raise up adversity against you from your own house, which happened, and I will take your wives before your eyes and give them to your neighbor, and he shall lie with your wives in the sight of the sun, for you did it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel, before the sun. And that did happen up on the rooftop, in plain view of everyone in Israel. Well, just to recap the decision points that were made. Number one, he had many wives and many children from different mothers. Number two, Amnon sought and followed bad advice from Jonadab. Number three was the affair with Amnon and Tamar. Number four, David heard about it, he knew about it, but he didn't do anything about it. He was angry, but nothing else. Number five, David allowed Amnon to go with Absalom. Number six, Absalom had Amnon killed. Number seven, Absalom flees and spends 3 years in Geshur. Number eight, David longs to see him, but he doesn't do anything about it. Number nine, he allowed Absalom to return, but he wouldn't see him. Number 10, he doesn't speak to Absalom. Number 11, he finally allows Absalom to come to him. Number 12, Absalom starts seeking the favor of the public. Number 13, Absalom goes to Hebron and gathers troops there, sets up his conspiracy. Number 14, David flees and he prays for bad counsel for Absalom. And number 15, Absalom follows the bad advice of David's friends Hushai. Number 16, Absalom attacks. Number 17, Joab and his men kill Absalom. And number 18, despite everything, David mourns Absalom's death. And then the big one, David and Bathsheba, that was behind all of this. Well, David came through it. His lament showed his true love for his son. Absalom could hardly have committed a greater sin toward his father, but David's love for him was stronger than Absalom's sins. Now imagine if he could have acted on that love and built on it. So some basic child-rearing points that are just very obvious, even to someone who's never had children. Pay attention to your children. Listen to them and know their concerns. Correct them when they're wrong and praise them when it's deserved. And let them know that you love them and that you stand behind them. David suffered and he mourned. And this was one of many trials that he endured in his lifetime. And like David and like Absalom, we're also going to go through trials, but hopefully not to the extent that they did. We'll make wrong decisions and we'll make bad decisions and we'll suffer the consequences of those decisions, whether right or wrong. David, as we see, was a very imperfect father. But we have a perfect Father in heaven who sees our mistakes and who greatly wants us to come to Him for advice, for correction, and for forgiveness. And just as David's love for Absalom lasted, our Father's love for us will be there for us right to the end.